This is the Orange Podcast, conversations with Orange City Council for the local community.
This is Alan Reader, and for some inexplicable reason, you've tuned in to the Orange Podcast. If you stick around this week, you'll hear two stories about water and another about why Orange needs a place where mums can get out of the rain, especially when it's cold. Coming up this week, why Orange is doing its bit for the health of a local creek by flushing thousands of litres of water from Sooma Park. And short of hiring some leprechauns, how does a council find out if some huge water pipes, metres below the ground, have been installed correctly? And what should Orange Council do for young mums and bubs with nowhere to go in the middle of a wet winter?
You know, I guess you've got to put yourself back to a time when you were a young mum and what facilities and stuff like that. You know, we had the indoor play centre in the PCYC and stuff where you could go and have mothers groups and meet up with, you know, other young parents. So because we get so cold in those winter months, I think it's important that we provide some sort of platform for young mums and bubs to still be able to do that in those winter months.
More from new council member Tammy Greenhalgh later in the show. But first today, it's time to find out what's behind a major release of water that started this week from Sooma Park Dam. You're listening to the Orange Podcast. A couple of years ago now, Orange was in the middle of a drought, down to below 20% in Sooma Park. Then, since then, things have got a lot better and our water security is much more optimistic than it has been for a long while. But this week, for a range of reasons, we've started to release 4.3 megalitres of water out of Sooma Park Dam every day. That's set to continue for a couple of weeks. To find out why, Orange City Council's Technical Services Director, Ian Greenham. Ian, tell me some more of why we're releasing 4.3 meg a day from Sooma Park.
Yes, g'day, Alan. The 4.3 megalitres a day release is part of an environmental flow release that we're required to do under our licence conditions for operating the dam as a responsible dam operator. We have a similar release, which is slightly higher in the summer period, when the flows get up to inflows get up to 7 megalitres a day. We release through summer 7 megalitres a day from the dam. Through autumn, it's 4.3 megalitres per day, and it's for a period of it's an environmental flush that's for a period of 17 days. While those inflows are above 4.3 megalitres per day through autumn.
This is a thing that's required by government, but it's also good for the environment.
It is, yeah. So we have a number of communities downstream of natural habitat where we have fish and turtles, and also there's been known to be some platypus and natural water rats and that are endemic to the area. And so these environmental flushes are important to maintain that biodiversity and be environmentally responsible.
You can only imagine what the Darling River would be like if it had major flushes twice a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Once the water's gone, we can't tell what that's going to be used for. It might be an irrigator. It might be good for the platypus. But we're just releasing it, and the environment will benefit.
That's right, Alan. We have no control over the water that gets used downstream. The state has some responsibilities there for managing that, but the water that's released from the dam itself, that's our responsibility to comply with the state rules.
As you mentioned, it's one of the conditions on that 4.3 meg release is that there's water coming in. We're in a very good state at present. The ground's very saturated and rain every other day. It's a good time to be releasing this amount of water.
Oh, it certainly is, Alan. Our dam isn't used for flood mitigation downstream as such. Most of the areas downstream are well off from the creeks and not necessarily subject to flooding. So it's purely a water supply dam. But in having a dam on a natural stream, you are required to have some environmental flow releases, and this is just part of that process.
Okay, and on the topic of water from the Macquarie River, the pumps that we use to pump water from the Macquarie pipeline, they've been out from repairs. Where are they up to now?
Yeah, thank you, Alan. Those pumps have been reinstalled in the last month. While we've been having overflow conditions and while the dam storage is above 80%, we generally don't operate those pumps under our management plan, so for operating the dam. So those pumps are used to top up the dam once we start getting below that 75-80% mark, and looking at also what sort of rain is in the area or what sort of forward forecast we're looking at. So if it's going to be particularly dry, we'll cut them in right on the 80% mark. If it's going to be particularly wet, we might hold off to about the 75% mark before we start operating those pumps to supplement our water supply.
Ian Greenham, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Alan.
You're listening to the Orange Podcast, telling the stories of what's happening at Orange City Council. You'll remember we've had some 8 new councillors last time we had a local government election, and in recent weeks we've been meeting some of them and finding out what matters to them. Next up is Councillor Tammy Greenhouse. Tammy, thanks for joining us today. Could you like to introduce yourself? Who is Tammy Greenhouse?
So Tammy Greenhouse is a country girl that was born and bred in Orange. I'm a wife, a footy mum, a daughter, a sister, an auntie, a friend with a passion for our community. And I'm also recently a bereaved mother.
Tell me some more of those things. What brought you to the point of running for Orange City Council?
I guess through my sporting contacts, our new mayor, Jason Hamling, reached out to me and said, come on, Tam, I think you'd be great at this. And initially I was like, oh, God, I don't know. But I'm quite competitive and I do love community. So once I actually had time to sit and think about it, I sort of thought, yeah, you know what? I wouldn't mind a stab at this. If I can make a difference in our community, I'd be more than happy to give back.
Is it what you expected?
I think it's what I expected and more. I think there's some great people. There's some great things about our town. You know, our focus on our campaign trail was all about inspiring family life in Orange. And even though I'm heavily represented in the sporting side of our community through my association with Bloomfield Junior Rugby League, which I've been a secretary of now for 11 years, you know, the roads, rates and rubbish, they're always going to be there. And they're things that, you know, they're going to stay there forever. But I think when we get down to the nitty gritty of the sporting things, you know, let's make our stadium happen. Let's get that water park that we want. Focus on the indoor play centre. I just want to make it clear to the public that even though I'm focused on sport, it is about the other things as well. But when I look at sport, I think I look at sport a bit differently to other people.
For example?
Sport develops strong social bonds. You know, people that are in an active community, I think, are more happier. The life skills and stuff that you can take away from sport are priceless. You know, those relationships, those mateships and stuff that you build, those friends, you know, you have those for life and you learn some critical life skills. You build resilience, respect, confidence. And children that play sport actually perform better in the classroom. And, you know, the support that we've had from our sporting community after we lost Harry was just unbelievable. And until I think something like that happens, I don't think you realise how great a community we actually live in, and how good of friends your children have out here in the country, and those relationships we'll have forever.
Is it too simplistic to say if you've faced these sort of adversities on a sporting field, if you've come up against some tough opposition, if you've, I don't know, battled through pain together, that stuff goes off the field with you as well?
Oh, 100%. Definitely. Yeah, it certainly does. You know, and just that team environment and that community spirit, I guess, that we're lucky enough to have out here, I think gets you through a lot of things in life.
In that list of things that you mentioned a moment ago, things you want to look at, there's some indoor play areas. So is there a tension there for you between organised sport, playing as part of a team, turning up on 10 o'clock on Saturday morning and playing a game, and then a sport that you'll just go and do on your own, like climbing up a rock wall with not being part of the team? Is it the same sort of thing?
Yeah, like it's horses for courses, I guess, isn't it? Like some children don't like to be a part of a team. So I think it's about that diversity and inclusion, you know, for our children in our community as well. And, you know, I guess you've got to put yourself back to a time when you were a young mum and what facilities and stuff like that. You know, we had the indoor play centre in the PCYC and stuff where you could go and have mothers groups and meet up with, you know, other young parents. So because we get so cold in those winter months, I think it's important that we provide some sort of platform for young mums and bubs to still be able to do that in those winter months, particularly after COVID.
That's certainly one of the ideas that's come from the face-to-face sessions and part of the online activity as part of the community strategic plan, community conversation. Some of they're still being collated as we speak, but some of those ideas do include a place where people can go in when it's cold and have fun with other young kids and for parents to meet together as well. That's something you'd like to see happen?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely something that we do need out here. Sometimes, as you know, as a young mum, you know, and being locked away with COVID and stuff, you know, you can go through postnatal depression and stuff like that. So I think it's really important that we do provide those platforms, being in a regional area. We don't have access to as many facilities and larger groups that they would have. I know some of those groups have been doing Zoom sessions and stuff through COVID. So I think that's important that we have been able to adapt out here. And that's probably put a lot of our mums and lots of other groups in contact with, you know, people from other areas. So that's an advantage to some degree as well. I think you've always got to try and take a positive out of something.
The things you mentioned there, a rock wall or an indoor playground, they're things that are mostly handled by private enterprise. How does the council get that sort of stuff to happen without going into business in competition with private enterprise?
I guess I'm not quite sure. We're still trying to nut out those sort of things. So I think our job as a council is to explore those opportunities and, you know, see what funds are available for those things. And then, you know, I guess we put the motion to council and, you know, we all decide what we think is best for our community.
Other priorities for you?
Probably one other big priority for me, apart from getting the stadium done, as you know, I'm passionate about rugby league and sport. But something that's quite personal for me is trying to establish a chapter of the Compassionate Friends Group here in Orange. After we lost Harry, I started travelling over to parks to meet with other bereaved parents. I think in a small town sometimes, you know, people can be quite private, quite embarrassed to open up and talk to other bereaved parents about what they're actually going through. I think it's a really important part of the grieving process. And, you know, we may not get people for the first few sessions, but hopefully we can break down that stigma like you do in other, you know, mental health cases as such. And, you know, just provide that platform for people to talk and, yeah, get it off their chest, I guess, because it is difficult. You do lose friends. They don't know what to say to you. They don't know whether to speak about your child. It's actually, I think, it's more difficult for the people in the community than it is for yourself as a bereaved parent because they don't know what to say.
How do they learn?
I guess from talking to people like us, you know, by getting that chapter going and, you know, you've just, I even went to my next door neighbour because she was devastated. She didn't know what to say. So I made the first call. I went in there and I broke the ice because I knew how hard it was for them. So I guess, you know, you've just got to reach out to people and, you know, you don't even have to say anything. It's probably just about sitting and listening to them. Talk about their child.
And perhaps the council could get involved in helping to lift the profile of a group like that, give it some more, some opportunities to happen.
Yes, yeah. And it, I guess it's not just, it's young kids too. I mean, we've had a lot of youth suicide and I think our children need to be very resilient nowadays. Bullying and social media and stuff has changed that. You can't get away from it. So that's something else I definitely want to explore is that we keep being able to support the resilience program through the 13 schools that have signed up for it in Orange. Wayne Hill initially started that, whose passion is about rugby league as well. So I'm really happy that we can try and keep supporting that out here as well.
There's some key priorities for you personally. A lot of the council agenda is reading large folders of work, planning decisions, other sorts of, how you're finding that the grind of getting through that work?
I think it's good. Like, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to read. The hit the ground running courses that the local government, New South Wales, have been providing for newly elected councillors has been very helpful. Attending the local government conference in Sydney, that was priceless. To be able to mix with, you know, 50% of experienced councillors and 50% new councillors, there was a lot of us that were in the same boat. And we definitely learnt a lot there about the rate pegging and the grants funding, lots of motions. And, like, overall, it really just helped us learn how to run meetings and be better so we can come back and implement that sort of stuff into our community and, you know, make a difference in Orange.
New council member Tammy Greenhalgh. We'll find out about the priorities of another new council member in the next episode of the Orange Podcast. So here's a scenario. A construction company has been hard at work to build a new housing subdivision on the edge of Orange. No house blocks have been sold yet, but the roads and gutters have been installed, and it's easy as looking at them to check if they're up to scratch. But what about the giant water and sewer pipes that might be buried 3 or even 7 metres below the ground? How does the council tell if they're clear and not broken? Orange City Council has taken delivery of a new van-mounted piece of equipment that can shine a light and a camera on what's happening deep underground. Water team member Eddie Guitar.
So this machine's called a Rover system, IPEC, from IPEC, and it's pretty much a CCTV unit that we use to put down sewer lines. It's pretty much a remote control tractor, whatever you want to call it, with a camera, and it's used to put down the sewer systems and storm lines to do a condition reports.
We're here on the site of a new subdivision. The subdivision crew have installed pipes that's under the ground. How do you know if they're in good condition?
Well, this is where I come along. We've got this camera system we put in line. Like I said, we do a condition report on to confirm that it is put in correctly as per the code.
So you've had a camera van before. How is this one different and better?
Well, this one's obviously far more advanced than the unit we've had. The last one was 9 years old, so this one has got the attachments to go up, in deeper levels of water, larger diameter pipes. The camera is meant to be sitting in the centre of the pipe, so if you're looking at a 150-metre stormwater pipe, the camera must be sitting up around the 500 mark. So with the elevator lift on the camera, we can do that now.
Tell me about the elevator lift. Why is that important? What can you do with that?
Well, we can raise the levels of the camera. When the levels of water do rise, we can now have the camera head above that water level, and now we can proceed to do the larger diameter pipes, whereas before with the previous camera, we couldn't do that. So you get into 6 inches of water, that was it. So with the new camera now, we've got that option to have that elevate lift the camera above the water level, and we can proceed to do our condition reports.
How far down a pipe can you go?
Well, this cable here is 300 metres long, so we've just stretched it out a couple of weeks ago, about 240 metres, so I'm pretty confident this will do the 300 easy.
As part of the new system, a computer mounted in the van helps you match the video that you're shooting down a pipe with really specific locations. How does that work?
So with the program here, WinCan VX, all that's pretty much telling you what's guiding us to do is to put out any defects. It captures the video, obviously, the locations, gives you the diameter pipe, the material of the pipe.
And when you provide that information to a builder, the guys who've built the subdivision, that's some proof of what they need to fix, and that gives them some guidance to where to find it.
Yes, exactly right. So with the plan, I just pinpoint exactly where the defect is, and with the I can provide measurements and between pits and pit number to pit number, so it works out well.
If we didn't have this gear, if we weren't checking the quality of pipes, what are the problems that could happen?
Down the future, you'll be running into blockages. If the pipe's not put in correctly, it's crushed. You know, you're going to get in sewer choke. So we'll be coming back with the team, spending a full day trying to rectify that. So, you know, if I find a defect today, that's, you know, possibly saving $3,000 to $4,000 down the line per defect. So, depending on the serious nature of it.
And for the people who'll live on this subdivision one day, they just want their water to go away. They want to flush a toilet and for it to happen. Is it important for them to get an idea of what's behind delivering the quality, what's under the ground?
Yeah, that's right. It's important. You buy a block of land, you put your investment into it. Last thing you want to do is a year in and all of a sudden there's someone's digging up your front yard, repairing a sewer main because it's put in incorrectly, you know, or stormwater is blocked, or, you know, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to have that happen in their front yard.
That's Eddie Katar from Orange City Council's water team. And that's the show for this week. Remember, you can download this program anytime from the Orange City Council website or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you won't miss a thing. Until next time, this is Alan Reader. Bye for now.